My guest at this time is Dr. Vance Ginn, senior economist at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, where he is also the director of the Center for Economic Prosperity. For the next few minutes, we'll be discussing encouraging economics reports and the popularity of the Bernie Sanders plan for the government to provide everyone a job, a college education, and health care. And Dr. Ginn, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on the show, Greg.
Well, let's start with the good economic news for at least 1 week last month. First-time jobless claims dipped to just 211,000, the lowest number since 1969. I can easily remember a time last decade when anything under 400,000 first-time claims was considered pretty good. So what does this number tell us?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So this is the number of people who are filing those jobless claims, and many of them get unemployment benefits, things of that nature. And when you smooth this out a little bit more for the last 4 weeks, for the last month, it's actually down to 221,500, which is the lowest level since 1973, so 45 years. So this is a good sign for the labor market.
And so does this mean people are getting good jobs?
Well, it doesn't say exactly what type of jobs they're getting, but when you dig deeper into what jobs have been created over the last month or two, it's really been in a number of different sectors. When you look at the oil and gas industry, it's really starting to expand the last few months, along with some professional and business services sector as well, and those are usually high-paying jobs.
Are we seeing a significant change in things like the labor participation rate or the U6 number that factors in people who have given up looking for work or are taking part-time jobs when they would prefer full-time jobs? Are those numbers heading in the direction we'd like to see?
They are improving, Greg, but there's still what I would consider to be a ways to go. I mean, you know, the unemployment rate's at 4.1%, the reported number, but the U6, which includes underemployed and discouraged workers, is still above 8%. And so, that's above where we're usually at this time into an economic expansion. As of this month, this is the second longest expansion in American history. So you would expect for it to be even lower than that. The employment to population ratio, which is another variable that I like to look at, and you really dig into just the 25 to 54 year old prime age working years, that one's still a percentage point below where it was back in 2007 before the Great Recession. And that means about 1.2 million of those people have just either stopped looking for a job, maybe they've went on disability, a number of different factors. So it's not just, you know, the baby boomers that are retiring or the people that are going to school. These are people that are usually in the labor force working and are not, but we have started to see some improvement even there.
And as long as we're mentioning the labor force, comparing those numbers to 1973 comes with a major asterisk because the labor force is a whole lot bigger than it was in 1973, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. 1973 is about half the size that it is today. So when those jobless claims numbers are as low as they were then, that shows you what sort of situation that we have with a improving labor market and possibly some people just sitting on the sidelines now, maybe waiting for a job as the labor market continues to improve.
We're talking with Dr. Vance Ginn, senior economist at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. So exit question on this front, Dr. Ginn, why are these numbers improving and how do we make them even better?
I think a big part of it has to do with the regulatory reform. The rollbacks by the Trump administration last year gave some more consumer and business confidence out there that are near record highs, along with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that was passed in December. These things have really started to say, you know what, let's go ahead and invest. Let's go ahead and hire more workers. And people are spending at the same time. And that's the way you really get more job creation and more economic growth over time.
All right, Dr. Ginn, let's talk about Bernie Sanders. Now, he, of course, was nearly the Democratic Party nominee, even though he wasn't technically a Democrat, except for the campaign in 2016. Ultimately, Hillary Clinton got the nomination. But based on the reaction to Bernie Sanders' economic plan here, he may have won the war for the soul of the Democratic Party, at least on the economic front. He's talking about the government providing everyone a job. He's talking about the government providing everyone free, in quotes, health care and at least free college tuition. 46% of Americans, according to a Rasmussen poll, like this idea. This is about as socialist as Bernie Sanders has gotten, as blunt as he's gotten about it, and almost half of Americans like this. What does that tell us about where America is right now?
Well, Greg, I think what it tells us is that people like to get things for free, or what they perceive to be free. But you know what else? It also tells me, though, that 56% of people understand the opportunity cost and what direct cost this will have, which is actually pretty, or 54%, I should say, the other side of this argument, say this is not a good idea. So even if they can, quote-unquote, it being free, they still oppose it because they understand this is going to come with some sort of cost. Somebody's got to pay for it. And all the details, as you know, aren't out yet, and I'll be interested to see what they are. But, you know, making sure that the jobs pay $15 an hour, making sure that there's health care benefits, maybe even having, quote-unquote, free college, all these things will come with a huge cost. And so if you're raising the cost of doing business, that means fewer jobs available in the private sector. So are we going to have more federal government jobs? I mean, how exactly will these people be employed?
Where would the money come from? Is it just higher taxes? Where would he get the revenue from?
Well, that may be part of it. I mean, you know, raise taxes on individuals. I also think that Bernie Sanders and others believe that the corporations are paying too low of tax, and that was just lowered to 21%. So maybe corporations would pay a higher amount. I remember one of my favorite economists, Milton Friedman, said there's no such thing as a free lunch, and there's also no such thing as free government programs. And so this will come with a cost, and it could be in the form of course, higher taxes, but also in the form of fewer jobs, lower wages, and just people not having nearly as much prosperity as they do in a situation today where they have the ability to negotiate for whatever job they want. I mean, the government could force you to have a job, but you may not like that job.
You've explained why this is not going to work. We could go into more detail on that. But it's pretty clear what the Democratic message is. And even Bernie Sanders is able to win over Hillary Clinton on a couple things, like free college tuition, supposedly, and that sort of thing. How far behind the eight ball are conservatives on messaging on this issue?
I think quite a bit. I mean, I think that's one thing that conservatives have done a poor job is on messaging and dealing with how to put a human face to many of the policies that they are promoting. When you look at the free market, how exactly has this helped people to be more prosperous over time? That's something that I really work hard on here at the Texas Public Policy Foundation is to figure out, but really discuss how each one of these policies will help people, help families be better off. And oftentimes the left has a better message, and oftentimes that can win, even though what I would argue is their policies do not get the best results and aren't the reason for specific results over time. It's through the form of capitalism and allowing for free markets and people to exchange to best satisfy their needs.
How much of it is a problem of conservatives not being able to say, hey, I just want to give you this stuff. I'm going to create the conditions that will make it easier for you to continue working to achieve your dream, as opposed to Republicans. Sometimes, you know, there were a lot of conservatives upset with the kind of mealy-mouthed approach to Obamacare reform last year. Instead of bold contrast, it was, well, we're not really taking this away from you. It's almost an apologetic approach to reform as opposed to a bold capitalistic approach.
No, I think that's right. I mean, whenever you don't have a message of you're getting this for free, that's really tough to counter and to say, look, there are going to be costs, but what's going to make us more prosperous over time is giving you the individual liberty and the freedom and the economic environment with which for you to prosper. And, you know, and oftentimes that can be difficult when you're saying you're cutting taxes and then you show that the corporate income tax rate went from 35% to 21%. How is that not for the quote unquote rich? And understanding how, you know, businesses simply submit taxes. They don't actually pay for them. People pay for them through the form of higher prices, lower wages, and fewer jobs available. And oftentimes that's a difficult message to sell, but that's the economic reality. And I think we've got to stick to those core principles throughout each and every one of these policy initiatives.
Last 30 seconds, let's tie them together. Which do you think will be easier to sell the American people on, whether it's 2018 or 2020 or beyond? You'll get all this stuff for free, or look what's happening right now in our economy with these numbers, whether it's job creation, low first-time unemployment, productivity, and all sorts of other things.
I think it's going to be easier to sell that we cannot afford these quote-unquote free programs, and we see the situation that we're in today with more economic growth and job creation through the private sector, and that's where it should remain.
Just had a conversation last week about how at existing spending levels and the rate of increase on mandatory spending and other things, pretty much all the revenues are going to be gobbled up by those things about a decade from now. And now Bernie Sanders wants to add all this stuff. So it'll be interesting to see where he ultimately decides this money is going to come from. Dr. Ginn, thank you very much for your time today. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg. Have a great day.
You too. Dr. Vance Ginn, senior economist at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, where he also directs the Center for Economic Prosperity. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.